Hi, Michaela Lafrac here. The podcast you are about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. Today, we are coming to you live from Jay Peak Ski Resort in Jay, Vermont. We're up in Orleans County, just a 10-minute drive or so from the Canadian border. We're talking today about this year's ski season, which in many parts of the state is just kicking off. We'll speak with the legendary skier, Barbara Ann Cochran, of Cochran's Ski Area in Richmond. And we'll be talking après-ski with some purveyors of delicious, warming foods at the base of Jay Peak. Our first guest today is the president and general manager of Jay Peak Resort, Steve Wright. He's been in the role since 2016 and previously worked at Killington as well. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're so glad to have you. So you've been the director since 2016, as many locals know. That was a complicated time for Jay. There was the EB-5 visa scandal involving Bill Steger, a national news story. Are there any lasting effects of that time that still loom over the resort and the employees?
I think most of the lasting effects are positive ones, honestly. Between the EB-5 period and then the pandemic, which followed up a few years after that, it sort of galvanized everyone. We all sort of realized that the only way through these business interruptions was staying together in it. And it was something that gave us and gives us perspective on what difficult times are going forward, because we reasoned that, you know, we were able to navigate those two business interruptions. You can pretty much get through anything. You deal with a worldwide global pandemic and a receivership all within a 3 or 4 year period, you're pretty good in terms of resiliency.
Yeah. And Jay is a huge part of the regional economy here. How many people do you employ?
On an annual basis, between full-time year-round and then the seasonals that we bring in during high compression in the winter, it's about 1,200 or 1,300 people.
Okay. Yeah. And a couple years ago, 2022, I believe, Jay was bought by a resort group, Pacific. How has that changed daily operations here?
In terms of daily operations, it hasn't changed at all. Their perspective on resort operations is to let the individual areas and brands sort of manage themselves. And they provide, obviously, some intellectual support at a senior level, but they also provide financial support. That's, you know, was a piece that was missing through that, even the receivership period was, you know, a receivership, the business focus is really to stabilize the property and not necessarily to invest in growth. The new company coming on board has given us and put us in a position where we can invest in more of a future and not focus so much on just simply the day-to-day.
Okay. So, yeah, thinking about the future and our changing climate's a big part of running a ski resort, I can imagine. What are the big thought bubbles above your head as you notice our winters changing and maybe that's that effect on people buying ski passes or the number of times people come out to Jay?
Yeah,
year.
You're throwing a lot at me. We go pandemics, then right into
hey, it's not me.
Receivership, and then climate change. We'll
the
fix
fun
everything.
Stuff, right?
Here. Yeah. No, I mean, it's obviously there's, you know, you look to your left and look to your right, and the climate is certainly changing.
Yeah.
And it's impacting the ski industry, and there's a kind of a symbiotic relationship within the ski industry that there are some things that are done here that obviously drive some climate change too. We're a user of energy in a major way, but I think that all of the resorts, specifically the ones in the state of Vermont, have really focused on managing that output in a way that causes as little disruption as humanly possible.
Yeah.
You know, for us here, yeah, we realize that sometimes the seasons are getting off to a later start, and sometimes the seasons are closing early based on how much natural snow falls and our ability to make any incremental snow on top of that. You know, but for us, if you look at our seasonal averages of natural snow, somewhere around 355, 360 inches a year, hasn't really changed in the last few years. Mm. This year, actually, we got our earliest start that we've had probably in a decade, with the week prior to Thanksgiving. So
that's heartening.
Yeah, I mean, if you look through that short-term lens, you can convince yourself that everything is okay. But once you take a step back and widen things a little bit, you realize that we all need to be better stewards of the environment.
Yeah, yeah. When you're talking about the weather here around Jay specifically. There's something called the Jay Cloud.
I've heard of that.
I imagine folks who are at resorts in other parts of the state might be a little envious of sometimes.
Especially this year. Tell us about it.
Yeah.
Technically, it's orographic uplift. What is that? Yeah. Right. It's the phenomenon of storms when they sort of make their way towards the mountain here. We're really the first landmass that some of these bigger storms run into. It will slow the storm down, cause the storm to elevate and get into colder air as it elevates. And the storms will literally get stuck up here and stick they do and drop more snow on us in the process.
Okay. I feel like this is the one industry where you want a storm to get stuck near you.
Otherwise, people are like,
move along.
Yeah.
Well, somebody who knows the weather and its effects on these slopes very well is also with us today, Martin Clements, Jay's Assistant Ski Patrol Director. Martin, thanks for sitting with us.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
So tell us about how the ski season's been so far from your perspective in terms of weather and snowfall, things like that.
It's been the same as it has been, actually. Our season starts way before the snow falls with a bunch of trainings and getting together, getting ourselves ready. Once the snow hits, we hope to actually be ready. So then we're putting skis on, but we've done a lot of prep before, and that's the same as we do every year.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been working at Jay?
I've been in patrol for 12 years, mm-hmm. and I worked in a couple other departments before that, kicking around, slinging bottles, bartending, and that.
All right.
I'm happy to always be here.
And when we say ski patrol, there are lots of folks here who don't ski or snowboard and aren't really familiar with your role, the work that you do. What exactly does it mean to be on ski patrol?
Well, do you want me to run through what our daily operations are?
Yeah, let's do it.
We start with sort of getting info from the groomers, the snowmakers, and the lift ops. That starts in the dark, probably around 6:37. We get reports, and then our crew comes in. We've got a paid staff of about 18 patrollers. Some of those are volunteer. Most of those are full-time. And we've got a larger volunteer staff, about 60 or 70 volunteer staff. We start getting those reports in, and we have a morning meeting where everyone gets together. We run through. We have a system that a lot of the patrols have worked on for years to get together, where we go out the door with a plan. We've got to check the trails in the morning. We have a list of jobs from the day before, prioritized in high priority to low priority. We've got to ski all the open trails from the day before. Mm. And check if anything else can be open or needs to be closed. We have a system of, we have safety that has to be managed at the top of the mountain. We have a patroller that is always at the top of the mountain able to respond. So we have hour and a half shifts or sits, as we call them, broken up throughout the day. And our patrollers are divided on our three peaks here at Jay. So that they can have coverage for all of those. We have more right now when we just only have the one peak open.
Yeah.
And so it's more routine than it looks and more organized. But the majority then is skiing around, and we have what's called a patroller's eye. You're not skiing top to bottom as fast as you can go. You're skiing, looking for anything that needs to be done, worked on, often just side to side through the trails, and stopping and helping guests as well. Mm.
When you're skiing for pleasure, not for work, is it hard to turn off that patroller's eye?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think the only way I found is to go into the woods, not on the mountain. Mm. I think you're always, and most of the patrollers here will find they're always working when they're skiing here.
Yeah. Yeah. Steve, when did you first learn to ski?
When did I first learn to ski? I think I was 15 or I got a little late start. Mm. I was 15 or 16 years old at a little place called Boston Hills, just north of Boston, which is, I believe now is a retirement community on a slightly sloped piece of land, because it wasn't particularly slopey when I learned, but it's no longer there.
And what about you, Martin? When did you first learn?
I only learned to ski just recently. I started off as a snowboarder. So most of my career, I was snowboarding, and I've moved. When I got onto patrol, wanted to be able to sort of go up the hill a little bit more, work sideways, So in the last 10 years, I learned how to ski, or I'm still learning how to ski, should I say that.
And listeners, if you're just joining us, we are broadcasting live today from Jay's Ski Resort up in Orleans County. If you have grown up skiing here or another resort in the area, in our region, and want to share a special memory from that time, you can email us at vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Our phone lines are not open today. When you think about keeping visitors here safe on the slopes and maybe off too, I'm curious what some of your biggest concerns are, maybe common injuries that people face. Martin?
Well, what we look at, and I think Ski Patrol falls into two categories. We look at mitigation and then treatment. And most of our work is in mitigation, and that's education of folks. So we spread that out into other departments, where the lift departments, where we're looking at folks who are getting on the lift. Are they able to communicate with them? Are they getting on the right lift? Are they dressed correctly? We have hosts even at the bottom of the mountain, and we talk and work with them a lot to say and point people in the right direction. People who are here for the first time don't have a lot of idea what they're getting into or where they're going, as with any resort, but trying to educate and say, how are you doing? Where are you going? Are you lost? Any of that stuff. I think education is a huge part. And then the other part of mitigation is signage and trail work that we do, and then being out there and patrolling, being visible to help folks.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a bit more about the business of this resort. You're very close to Canada here. Steve, how important is that that Canadian base to business here at Jay?
Critical. They make up anywhere from 40% to 50% on an index basis of our overall gross revenue.
Oh wow!
We have access to within 2.5-3 hours. 5 million Canadians who can make this place a day trip, it can be a destination trip that you would add lodging for that, and that 5 million number expands as you get west towards Ontario, Ottawa, out in that direction. So very critical for us. And connected to that are things like making sure that the ports stay open 24 hours, which is an issue that we're facing right now, that there are some northern ports that the federal government is considering reducing the hours back to pandemic era crossing hours.
Yeah, I saw this week, Vermont's federal delegation is pushing to change those hours of Border Patrol back to pre-pandemic hours.
We've been, I've been specifically working with our delegation for the last month because we've seen that coming, saying, listen, this is going to have an impact both on our staff's ability to cross the border and work, but also our guests' ability to start their day at a correct time. And right now, they're talking about this North Troy port only opening at 8 o'clock, which is when our lifts open on weekends.
So you need your staff here earlier than that.
Yeah, absolutely. And the guests are going to start queuing up more than that. So yeah, the Canadian visitor is super, super important for us. And it's one of the reasons that we provide opportunities for them to buy non-margin products here, like lift tickets and water park passes and passes into our climbing facility at par when they use Canadian cash. We don't convert that. We let them pay with their own currency, which has been embattled for the last 6 to 9 months, which is, I've been here 21 years and we've never seen that Canadian dollar dip below 70 cents, and it's very close to doing that at this point. So it's critical that we provide them opportunities to affordably come here and visit, and that's one of the things that we do for them.
Yeah. You brought up the water park, something I am very curious about. I have not yet visited, though I'm quite excited to. Tell us about it.
Well, it's a 60,000 square foot indoor water park. It was one of the new hallmarks of this place. A huge après ski bar in there, a huge arcade, a place you can eat, but also a dozen or so rides and attractions in there, including a flow rider, a 360 degree loop drop where the floor drops out on you and you drop.
Not the wrapper.
This is La Chute. We'll make sure we introduce you to that. Don't worry, we're going to stick you in there.
Oh, God.
It's something that has changed the profile of the guest here in a way that we hadn't expected. And you look in the month of April, and there are people that drive here from the Mid-Atlantic on the New England side and drive here from Ontario on the Canadian side just to use the water park.
Us Mid-Atlantic folks really love a water park.
Yeah, and they're willing to drive for it, as I'm sure you are too, right? So we were surprised to see that. We thought we would get skiers who also want to use a water park.
Yeah.
But we have people visiting here who are just here for 3 or 4 days just to use that the park. So it's changed the guest profile, like I said.
Martin, are you a water park guy or do you stick to ski patrol?
I'm a water park guy.
Boy, Martin.
Respect. Steve, JP is now a part of Indy Pass. That's a development from a couple years ago. First, can you explain what that was and how that affected business here?
Indy Pass is a sort of a consortium of independently run ski resorts who aren't part of some of the bigger pass aggregators, who a bunch of years ago, there was a product that was created where these resorts would give up 2 days of access on that pass for anybody that bought it. So somebody that buys an Indy Pass has access to 2 days at 63 or 65 different resorts. We jumped on when the pandemic closed the Canadian border. We were not on that pass prior, but that year we reasoned that with losing 50% of our audience, we had plenty of capacity here and we needed to fill that capacity. And the first year that we were on that pass, we became the number one redeemed resort of any resort on the Indy Pass across North America. And we have been in the number one spot every year that every year we've been on it.
Wow.
So it's turned into a really important part of our business.
Yeah. Oh, well, as I'm looking out at the slope behind me today, I see some snow out there, but, you know, it's not covering the mountain. So let's talk a little bit about making snow here. How has that need changed over the years?
So you don't want to talk about the 10 to 14 inches of new snow we got in the last 24 hours?
I would be honored to talk about that. Bring it up.
We'll just get that plug in there. the need for snowmaking dovetails with what's happening, obviously, in the environment.
Right.
And fewer cold days, fewer stretches of cold days, a reduction in natural snow for some areas. But for us, it has allowed us to get open and stay open, and also to recover from bad weather events. I mean, here in the Northeast Kingdom, we certainly get a lot of snow, but you know, we could have this 10 to 14 inches of snow, and then it could rain within a few days, and we'd have to rebuild that base. And you don't do that just simply relying on natural snow. You need the snowmaking system to run alongside it.
Mm. Martin, do you notice any changes yourself when you're skiing on natural snow versus snow that's man-made or made by these machines, I should say?
Well, I think my skiing career began out west, and skiing on the east is just skiing on the east. You've got to have edges, and I can't tell the difference between snow, but it's all firm and it's all fast.
Yeah.
The more natural we get, obviously, the better. But skiing on the east is just such a unique and wonderful experience that you just, people who love it, and I think people who don't sort of work to loving it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we just got an email from a listener named Sean who writes, 2 years ago, I tore my ACL, among other parts of my knee. After reconstructive knee surgery and a long physical therapy rehab, I will be back on the slopes after 2 years off. I feel stronger than ever. And they give a shout out to their doctors and PT at UVMMC for putting them back together. And they end with, ready to shred the slopes.
Nice, Sean.
Yeah. Right. Congrats, Sean.
Excellent.
And folks, if you're excited about this year's ski season or have a place, a specific mountain perhaps that you want to give a shout out to, you can email vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Steve, I'm wondering, you know, most of our listeners, I imagine, are either at home or maybe they're in a cubicle or they're in the car driving somewhere, and they might not have this beautiful view that we have right now from the lobby of Jay. Can you maybe help us put our listeners in the place of Jay and maybe describe one of the more beautiful places that you love about being here, a specific spot?
Yeah, for me, it's really just, like the last two mornings driving up the 242, which is the last stretch before you get to the mountain, being able to see the profile of the mountain, but also framed against trees that have this 10 to 14 inches of recent natural snow sitting on their branches, is is something you never really get tired of. And it's really special. You know, I'll give a shout out to the rest of the state here. It really isn't just Jay Peak. It's really any ski resort in the state of Vermont. The approach roads that go to the mountain, because of the lack of, you know, billboards and really hardcore access road development, a lot of that is missing some from Vermont ski resorts. Vermont is a special place for that, and you can feel that approaching any of the areas, even in a different way than you do in New Hampshire and Maine, some of the other New England areas. Vermont is special as a result of a combination of things. And you know, hopefully our listeners who are in a cubicle or in their living room get to get onto an access road sometime and enjoy the snow that we've got out there now.
Yeah, our drive up here was absolutely gorgeous today. Martin, what's your favorite spot here in Jay or the surrounding area? Describe it for us.
You know, it's really the last run coming down from any of the peaks of the mountain. It's a beautiful time. It's everything's quiet and down. It doesn't always have to be panoramic views, but it's just that little ski run that's in front of you, and you've made it through the day. It's quiet, and yeah, you're just taking a breath and going down to get warm. Really, really enjoy that.
Yeah. Well, on that note of getting warm, last question for each of you. What is your favorite way to warm up after a day of skiing, either food or drink?
You want to roll with that, Martin?
Yeah, we have tradition down in patrol. I'm not sure I can talk about all of those, but no, you know, camaraderie.
No, do it. No one's listening.
Camaraderie at the end of the day. You know, we've got a fridge that everyone just enjoys, you know, relaxing, talking about the day. It's really in patrol base. I really do love that.
Yeah.
Just before it's a family, before we go home to our family, making it through the day, sharing a smile or a hard time. And then going home to your families.
That sounds really special. Yeah. Steve?
For me, there's an on the clock and off the clock. On the clock, for me, it's when you're over here at Tramside Base and you're coming down, when you get close enough to the tram, the miso tram, where you start to be able to smell the sesame oil, which pervades all of the persons here at the base. You can smell the sesame oil, and having it in our offices too. When folks invariably bring buckets of ramen in there, it smells fantastic. Mm. There's something very calming and soothing about that. The other part, when we're off the clock at the end of the day and the guests have gone home and we're winding up the day, usually sitting next to Martin in ski patrol with a cup of something in front of us, is a good way to salute the end of the day and that everybody survived.
That is Steve Wright, the president and general manager of Jay Peak Resort. Steve, thanks so much for your time today.
Absolutely.
We are also joined by Martin Clements, Jay's assistant ski patrol director. Martin, thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
We just got one other email from a listener named Rue, who writes, in the 1960s, my family lived in ski distance to the Underhill Ski Bowl. It was located on Stevenson Road in Underhill Center. We would ski there all the time. They had a rope tow and eventually got a POBA lift. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Sure.
All right, great. That's where I learned how to ski. It was owned by Emmy and Bill Durbro. There was hot food available, cooked by Emmy, and of course, hot chocolate. Well, thanks, Rue, for writing in and sharing that memory. Joining us now is the legend herself, Barbara Ann Cochran of Starksboro. She is the second of four siblings of the famous Skeen Cochran's family. Her parents started Cochran's ski area in Richmond, and the family has had several generations on the U.S. ski team. Barbara Ann won an Olympic gold in 1972. She was inducted to the National Ski Hall of Fame just a few years later. She now works with athletes on the mental side of skiing. Barbara Ann, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thank you so much.
So how old were you when you first put on skis?
I think I don't remember.
Okay, so that's early.
Yeah, I think I was probably about 2 or 3 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, and they weren't, back then, I mean, I called them skis, but they were more like just little kid skis, but very antique-ish.
Okay. And I also heard that the first ski poles you ever used were saplings that your family found in the woods behind your house. Is that true?
So that, not the ski poles themselves,
okay,
but the poles that, once we moved to Richmond and Dad built the rope tow behind the house so that we could train during the week and not just ski on weekends, then we needed poles to ski around to be able to get the training in to set the courses. So Dad used saplings from the woods that he just went out and cut, so that those were the poles that formed the courses that we had.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah. Well, you're bringing up the ingenuity of your father, which I think is a through line through much of the business at Cochran's. You all did a lot yourselves, including figuring out how to make snow, right?
Yeah, Dad. I think it was like the year of maybe 1980 was not a very good ski year, and or snow year. And so Dad realized that he really needed to develop a snowmaking system. And so he was an engineer, and that's what he did. He just, you know, like got these little guns and figured out how to get the water and combine water with an air compressor and make snow. And it made beautiful snow, but it was very, very, very inefficient, so that my parents would be up all night long because the temperature would be cold enough during the night, and they would become so exhausted, and they'd make the snow was beautiful. It was absolutely gorgeous, but it was about an inch and maybe on the Mighty Might, which is a very beginner hill for us.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah. And then the weather would change. It would warm up. We'd get rain. And it was like just this. We did have snowmaking from, you know, like I think it was 1981, but it wasn't. Now we have a system that when my mom passed away in 2004, we realized that we really needed to do more with snowmaking. So now we get water out of the Winooski River and pump it up. We have a pump house, and then the snow guns are much more efficient. So
okay.
Now
you're not out there at 2 a.m. trying to figure out
no.
how to work. Okay, good.
No, I don't think they trust me with the snowmaking. But anyway, so now like the goal is to make like 5 feet of snow on our trails.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah. And it makes such a big difference.
And Cochran's is kind of famous in the area for being a really great place for families to
yes.
take their kids to learn how to ski. Was that always one of your parents' goals?
It was my parents' goals. Like at first, when it was just the rope tow behind the house, the idea behind that was that Mom and Dad wanted to make sure that people, like, kids had the opportunity to be able to ski at an affordable price. And so early on, the Richmond PTA decided that they asked my mom if she could start an after-school program. Mm. So she started that, and that was on the rope tow that was right behind the house. But then as the land came up for sale, where the ski area is now, my parents decided to invest in that and buy it. And so then they expanded to where the ski area is now. And their goal is to always provide skiing. And as snowboarding came along, they also allowed snowmaking. Mm-hmm. I mean, snowboarding.
Mm-hmm.
And a
contentious subject in some places.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But their mission, they just felt that it's such a great sport that we want to be sure to have everybody that is interested in learning to ski or snowboard is able to do that. And so that is a mission now.
Yeah.
For Cochran's.
If you're just tuning in to Vermont Edition, and our show sounds a little different today than it normally does, maybe you're hearing some background noise, that's because we are broadcasting live from the lobby of the Jay Peak Ski Resort in Orleans County. We're discussing the ski industry and this year's season. Our guest right now is Barbara Ann Cochran. Barbara, and we talked with Steve Wright of Jay earlier about how they've seen the effects of climate change firsthand at the resort and are really meeting those challenges by, you know, diversifying their business model, by, you know, making snow and lots of different ways to keep people coming to the resort, keep business afloat. Has the same thing been happening at Cochran's?
Definitely. There's been, you know, we don't have a water park.
Sure.
So, you know, but I think the investment in the snowmaking system has been really key for us with climate change. Who knows how long that's going to be effective, but yeah. So that was a big thing that we did. And then the other thing that's happened at Cochrane's is that there's mountain bike trails now. Mm. And so that's been very, very popular, although it's people will come and use the mountain bike trails. I don't mountain bike, so I'm not really clear on how everything works. But I do love the trails for hiking. but so that's kind of expanded the experience at Cochrane's. It's not just the winter experience that you have with skiing and snowboarding, but also now there's the like during the spring, summer, fall, there is mountain biking that goes on too. Mm. And then the other thing that happens too is that there's a lot of events that happen at Cochrane's that, again, Jimmy Cochrane, my nephew, is the one that runs, he's the general manager for Cochrane's, but when a group goes to Cochrane's to say, you know, we'd like to do whatever it is, whether it's there's a climbing, I don't know exactly what these are, but I know like there's a weekend for that, like the climbers, the climbing walls.
I don't climb either.
But yeah.
Anyway. It sounds great. There's lots of different ways. It sounds like you're diversifying business.
And there's
there.
A Richard Tom organization that, mm-hmm. that has a bike event that starts out of Cochrane. So I think that's another way that we've tried to incorporate is to get some other diversified.
Other sports.
Other sports that way.
Barbara Ann, you have a gold medal, mm-hmm. and you are not wearing it today.
Oh, no.
Is there any part of you that wants to just wear it around? I feel like if I had a gold medal, I would just be, I'd have it under my shirt, I'd pop it out all the time.
I get places like this, and people will say, well, did you bring your gold medal? And it's like, I didn't even think about bringing it.
Oh, my gosh. You keep it in the glove compartment. So you have a storied skiing career, and now your son, Ryan Cochrane Siegel, he's also an Olympic medalist, and he's going to be competing in the World Cup this weekend, right?
He probably in about half an hour will be doing his training run mm-hmm. at Beaver Creek, and then tomorrow is the downhill World Cup race itself, and Saturday is the Super G, and then he doesn't do the giant slalom, which will be on Sunday.
Okay. Wow. So that's must be very exciting and probably nerve-wracking to watch. I wanted to ask you, because you've, the later part of your career have started working with athletes, with skiers, on that mental side of competing. It must take so much mental focus and grit and resilience to be a professional skier. Is that something that you've worked with your own kids on as well? Like, do you and Ryan talk about that side of the sport?
With Ryan, I tend not to. It's like I feel like if there's something that he wants to talk, there's so many other people in the family that he could go and talk to. So, like, I think he'd probably go and talk to my sister Lindy, who was his coach for a while, and also his cousin Robbie Kelly, who's really close and good friends, and Robbie's a coach. You know, so there's
what
other
a wealth
people.
Of people to rely on. How you do?
Yeah. And as far as like. I do remember my daughter, like when she was still racing, she was, she had graduated from high school and was doing a PG year, postgraduate year, racing. And there was a race that she went to, and she used to tell me, she said, Mom, I need somebody to talk to like you, but just not you. Mm. And so I went, you know, I try and, you know,
I think all of us could probably relate to that, either with our own mothers or our kids.
So then there was a race that was in in Maine that she was at, and I got a call from her on the phone, and she said, I guess it didn't go so well. And so she said, Mom, I really need to talk to you. And it was great. It was like, and
I'm
wondered.
Here, I could do it.
Yeah,
finally.
I wondered how I would feel like in talking to her, if I could see her as just another client, or would it be intermersed with being my daughter.
Yeah.
And when I was talking to her, I really felt like I got into that mode of, okay, she's just another client.
Yeah.
And but that was really interesting. But for Ryan, like, there's times, especially, you know, like I'll watch him on TV if he's in Europe or some, you know, far off place. And his first time that he was racing in Solden, I was saying he was starting back, so I didn't get to see his whole run because the TV won't show the whole run. They start. The interval training is, or the intervals are closer together, so the camera won't follow them the whole way. So I said, Ryan, I saw you at the start, and I saw you at the bottom, but how was the steep? His one-word response was, steep. And then I was going, oh, I just want to talk to him.
It's like the equivalent of the, how was your day at school, honey?
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, we have... You have this wealth of knowledge about both skiing and mental focus. So I do want to ask you to share with our listeners perhaps one piece of advice that you give skiers about retaining that mental focus when they're skiing. What's maybe one thing you could share?
One of the things that I think is so important is to really become aware of what are the pressure points. Producing thoughts that they might have, and what are the pressure reducing thoughts. And really, if they know anything about mindset, they'll understand that a fixed mindset is all about the results, about either how you're going to do, how you've done in the past on this hill or something like that. And that is always pressure producing. You will not get your best results when you're thinking that way. But a growth mindset is entirely different. It's about the process that you're going through. So that it's about the, you know, like when I would get into the start, it's almost like I had a little checklist. Okay, where do I want to stand in the start here? Do I want to be more to the left, more to the right, in the middle? How close, you know, is it a flat start or is it slightly tilted back? Or and where do I want to? I want to make sure that my poles are in a secure place, so when I push off, it'll be okay. So it's like I start thinking about all these things that I want to do when I'm in the start. That is like the focus. It's not putting pressure on me at all. It's like analyzing what I need to do. And then so the focus is on, you know, anytime you're thinking, I don't want to make a mistake. You know, I hope I beat so-and-so. I just, you know, like, I'm going to crush this course. Anytime those thoughts are creeping in, those are adding pressure. And those are not helpful. Mm. If you can get into a place where you're feeling energetic and it's really pleasant for you, like, this is so much fun. I just love, you know, love slalom or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Those are helpful thoughts. Mm.
Barbara Ann, while I have you, I'm wondering if you could give perhaps some advice for a hypothetical person who will be going to the slopes with her hypothetical daughter this year to teach her how to ski, she, this woman, is not a very good skier herself and is rather nervous about getting back into a sport where there's a lot of people around here who are really, really good at it. Help me out here. It's me. Shocking.
So my advice to you is to approach the time on the slopes as a time that you're just going out. It's almost like going out and sledding, where you're just having fun. You're going to go out. The expectations, you don't. Because we do have the Ski Tots program, which I think maybe you are going to do.
Can adults enroll in that?
You are enrolled in that.
Oh gosh. All right, I got to prepare. I'm part of it?
Because in Ski Tots, what we do, unless you're doing a private lesson for the 3.5-year-old, But if you're in, if you've enrolled in Ski Tots, the way that program works is that the parent actually teaches the tot how to ski, and we are teaching the parents how to teach their tot.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. That's so you do have to know how to ski. You do have to know how to ski. But if you're pretty nervous about it, then what we do is we kind of modify it a little bit. And the part where we say, after we introduce ski tots and teach the child how to fall on their magic circle so that they can stop. That's the first way we teach them how to stop, is by falling on their magic circle. And we have a little ritual that we go through with that. And then we say, okay, parents, we want you to put your skis on. You're going to take your tot to the top of the Mighty Mite and ski with them down between your legs. So we do have some parents that are a little bit nervous about skiing down with their tot. And so we say, well, we can modify it a little bit. Instead of you going up to the top of the Mighty Mite and skiing with your child down between your legs, you can actually just work with them at the bottom in your boots. You don't have to put your skis on, and just get them up a little bit, and just so that they get the sense of what skiing's like the gliding piece and standing on their skis. And
Barbara, and hearing you talk, it's so evident how many people in our region you have helped to learn how to ski, as has your family. It's a really remarkable thing. Before we let you go, I want to share an email we just got from Jim, who's in the Northeast Kingdom, who writes, I just wanted to say what a treasure Cochrane's is for the state. Our kids learned how to ski there in the 90s, and one went on to ski competitively in high school. It all started at Cochrane's. It's the place, and the people make it so very special. All the Cochrane family and staff are always so cordial and down to earth. It's a truly special thing.
Oh, thank you. It makes me teary-eyed.
Well, Barbara Ann Cochrane, thank you so much for joining us today and for driving up to Jay to meet us here. We're broadcasting live from Jay Peak Resort in Orleans County. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Our next guests are Jordan and Momo Antonucci. They run the Miso Hungry food cart at the base of Jay Peak. Jordan and Momo, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
You're both wearing your gear. Did you go out skiing or snowboarding before this?
Oh, yeah. We got out early. We had a MISO staff hangout day, management meeting, and we got out super early. It was awesome.
Wow. How was it?
It was great.
Yeah?
Yeah. That bike makes cool.
So, Momo, you grew up in Japan.
Yes.
What food traditions did you want to bring with you when you started this business?
Wait.
What did you learn from your time growing up in Japan that affects what you are serving here? What do you serve in your restaurant?
Nanigaski
nihongo nihonkara.
Oh, so we are like that dummy shop. It's nothing like, you know, not close, nothing like sandwich, pizza,
right,
and cheese. And you know, we are 100% Japanese food.
Yeah.
To, like, people really loves like a traditional style. Because I love my noodle after skiing.
Yeah.
So like I just because I loved it. I love like soup and the noodle. So that's I want to share with any people, because I like it.
Yeah.
To after skiing.
That's your favorite food for after skiing.
Yes.
And you want to share it with others.
That's we made it.
Yeah.
Because we like skiing Japan, so we met skiing Japan. So that's my favorite food. Jordan's favorite food. So we want to share with people.
With others. Yeah. Skiing. You want to make what you love yourself.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jordan, how did you two meet?
Oh, that is a long story.
Give us the cliff notes.
I was living in Japan as a ski instructor, And then in the summer, all the snow melts and it becomes whitewater raft season really quickly. And the two of us met in the same rafting company, which is pretty wild. We were 9 people in like a 1,200 square foot house living there, living right on top of each other. So we met whitewater rafting in Japan. Mm-hmm. And pretty wild early days of not very good communication between the two of us, but we've been living together and working together literally for over 12 years now.
Yeah. Wow. Do you speak Japanese together primarily at home? Or a mix?
I have a very limited vocabulary, but I'm pretty good at using my imagination, like moving the words around.
People love children Japanese.
Sound like a little kid.
Yeah, they understand it.
But Momo, we try to a little bit more during, or I try to more during like dinner time or when we're together as a family with our two kids. But Momo talks to the kids exclusively in Japanese, which is pretty awesome. And starting as of last summer, they actually go to school in Japan in the summer as well.
Oh, wow.
So they're pretty bilingual little
Little rippers. You're fine, yeah.
Yeah. Where do you source your ingredients from?
I have a Japanese company to using because it's nothing...
There's some base stuff like soy sauce. We've experimented with all sorts of different kinds of soy, raw miso pastes.
Yeah, this is for the miso base.
For the miso base. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the dry goods that we bring in that are very Japanese centered, we bring in the real stuff from a Japanese purveyor.
Yeah.
But like our pork belly, we get to from Vermont whenever possible, or regionally, sometimes New Hampshire. We use maple syrup as our marinade for so when we braise the pork belly or braise the eggs.
Vermont or Canadian? It's right Vermont, on the border.
Literally our backyard. So Kingdom Road maple syrup is some of the best stuff I've ever had on planet Earth. Literally just dropped it off today as I was snowblowing, getting ready to come skiing. He had his ski boots on, and we were all heading to go to the lift together.
Yeah.
So veggies, tough to get during the winter. But, there's local food purveyors all throughout the state. And in the summer, when we are open, we get as much stuff locally as possible. There's a great fella, Mickey, who has a garlic farm over in the Montgomery side. And we always do some trades early on and uses garlic whenever we can.
That's delicious. Let me share a couple emails that we've gotten from our listeners. One is from Sarah, who writes that Mount Ascutney ski area in Brownsville has been an important mountain for many families in the area. My father-in-law, they write, helped cut the slopes there during the Depression. My husband and all my kids learned to ski there, and most of the community could be found there on the weekends. It was such a loss when Ascutney closed, but recently, through efforts of folks in the community, there's a small community-run rope tow and T-bar running now on the weekends. We also got an email from Mark in South Hero, who writes, a sad result of our warming climate is that those of us who still enjoy the wilderness away from resorts can ski fewer days, and we must travel to enjoy what many once could enjoy close to home. More of skiing happens at the resorts are instead of in wilder, freer places. Our first email writer there talked about the importance of community and how ski resorts in Vermont really bring a community together, like Jay does. Could you talk a little bit about the Jay community and the role that your restaurant, your food truck, plays in that community?
Well, I think to say that we have we have a role, but no, I wouldn't call it like a big role in the community.
You're feeding the people.
we do get to meet everybody.
Yeah.
And we are kind of like the healthy rumor mill. We know how much snow is coming, how much snow was there, which trails are opening next. I like to really be on top of everything that's going on with Mountain Ops so we can talk to customers. I think it is a pretty sweet little hangout spot for people to come, see familiar faces, fill their bellies, give a lot of high fives out there. But the community of Jay is really something that's super special, and we're really honored to be a part of it in any way, shape, or form, whatever part that is. Even today, going to the lift, like, how many people did we see? Just every single person in that lift line. We know, how are you doing? Yeah. How's your family?
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't know, what's your experience with community?
You know, everybody loves skiing, to be here. Because, you know, I think it's hard to living here. You know, snow, cold, and people strong, like, being here. Mm. Yeah, like, nobody, like we choose to be here. You know, because I think like, most people want to be here with skiing. So that people loves here. Like, we just talking about snow, how cold, how good snow was. So it's super simple life. Yeah. But we can all connect that.
It's a deep love for the mountains and each other and similar priorities. And we don't even have to really talk. We can just get on a chairlift, ask a few questions, and then ski all day and connect with everyone that's up here. Hmm.
Well, we are broadcasting live at noon today, though you might be here the rebroadcast of this later. But I want you to help us get a little hungry, where our team is about to have lunch after this show. What is your favorite thing on your menu right now?
Oh, my gosh. Well, don't come today, because we are not
sure.
Open. We are
next time we're here.
The crew is skiing. I don't know. We call it the gateway, the miso, just the miso ramen. If you're really hungry, throw a little extra pork in there. But it's all of our, so we make the bone broth daily, made from scratch. So it starts with the bone broth base, and then Momo has her own secret miso recipe that has some 10 different ingredients in it, with caramelized apple, garlic, caramelized onion, sesame oil, raw miso, and a bunch of other really delicious flavors.
Is there a secret ingredient, or it's just the ratios that are secret? And will you tell me later?
I'm pretty sure.
I can tell later. Yeah.
Okay. All right. We'll talk.
Can we just say Momo is the secret ingredient?
That Momo energy.
Yes.
But yeah. So then the noodles, you know, it's a noodle that was designed actually on the East Coast for our broth, which is really cool, from this Japanese company in down south. And they packed with a bunch of heaps of delicious veggies, pork belly, local eggs with the marinade of maple syrup and shoyu, soy sauce. But Momo's definitely the secret ingredient. It's tasty.
Yeah. You know, you see me, it's going to be more delicious.
That's the confidence we like to hear.
That's true, but also our staff are incredible. And they might all be listening in the bar right now, for all I know, on the other side of the mountain.
We love you.
But we have an amazing crew, and that's a real secret. In what we do as well, is having people who support it, love the culture, love the food. Very fortunate.
And y'all are open year-round? Or what are your times that folks who are listening can come visit? Because I'm guessing a lot of people are going to want ramen after hearing this.
Well, we got a pretty awesome winter ahead. We're going to be open 7 days a week once we really get up rip-roaring, which will be
nice.
Starting Thursday next week. And we're going to be open late on Fridays and Saturdays, 2 till 7 o'clock. J-Peak has this super fun event that they're doing. Started it last year, called the Winter Shine, where they light up the tram car, and like there's this massive light reveal, and fireworks and s'mores. And so I think that's Saturday nights up at Jay.
All right.
And that'd be a great time to come grab some noodles.
All right. Well, Jordan and Momo Antonucci, thank you so much for joining us. You definitely made me very hungry. And thanks for telling us about your special recipes, too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.